What up? Thanks for listening to the On Fire podcast, brought to you as always by NBC7 in San Diego, joined by Derek Togerson. I'm Darnay Tripp. Derek, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm looking at tomorrow. It should be like a international holiday with International Signing Day. That's how the Padres built so much of this stuff, by doing that, man.
That's true.
They got their full pool. They got $5.8 million, second most in Major League Baseball, to go out there and grab some more 16-year-olds who we might be talking about in 2030.
And if there's ever a person who I would guess that like money burns a hole in his pocket, I would think AJ Preller.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. It's like giving my 9-year-old a Target gift card. It's like, let's go now. I don't care about candy. We're going now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. All right. We got a bit to get to, although it seemed like a quieter last week or so than, the previous couple that felt like high speed chases with all the moves and everything that was going on. A bit settled in. But first off, got to show our appreciation for OG's, the sponsor of the On Fire podcast. Of course, restaurants are closed for in-person dining, but you can order takeout or delivery directly from your local OG's. You can visit OG's.com or call them up to place your order. You can also purchase gift cards, and which we love, add alcohol to your order. OG's is doing growler fills, and OG's always has a great beer selection on top of the great food. And so appreciate them, support OG's and your local restaurants during this tough time. And thanks to all to OG's for all that they do for us. Couple things to get to. I think the Fernando Tatis situation, begs some discussion after a week where there were some reports that something might be happening, and then some other reports that kind of quieted those talks a little bit. And I think some discussion over what would, and we've talked about it a little bit, but what would that deal look like for Tatis? Curious what your perspective is on all this, because They make the big moves, the big three moves that we spent a lot of time discussing. And if you haven't had a chance to listen, a couple episodes ago, hearing from Blake Snell, hearing from AJ Preller, and then last episode, getting a chance to talk to Emilio Pagan, get his thoughts on the moves and what it does for this team. And of course, Padres president of business operations, Eric Grubner, just on the outlook for them, what this does just in terms of excitement around the club, and then how they're going to try and handle things in terms of getting fans in the stands. And obviously there's a great thirst for that, given the type of club we expect to see. Now it seems like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like attention has kind of shifted a little bit now. You know, there are still some moves to be made, but maybe more attention, at least from fans, curious, like, is something going to happen with Tatis this offseason?
I would have to think yes. Just because, I mean, here's the thing, they've got time, right? They got plenty of time to work it out. It's a couple of years from arbitration, but, and this is where it's tough to speculate because we're not in the room and we don't know what the situation is. I mean, some guys, like we talked about with Chris Bryant, like they're going, hey, come on, I proved it. You know, be loyal to me as I've been loyal to you. And that creates a very toxic situation. Tatis doesn't seem like that kind of guy. And we don't know if he's going, look, man, I've got my, you know, $5 million Gatorade endorsement. I'm good for a while. Let's just kind of talk and we'll work it out and everything's good. And I got you. Or he's going, look at what I'm doing. I'm the face of the freaking game. I had the number 4 selling jersey in all of baseball this year. You better pay me what I'm worth or else it's going to hurt you in the long run, which I don't think would be the case, but I certainly mean he's got that kind of leverage for sure. In fact, it was interesting. I was driving my 12-year-old to baseball practice last night, and we're talking about different numbers and why they mean different things. And he goes, like 23 is just Tatis, man. Like he's the best number 23 in the game. And he's like, who's the best number 27? I'm like, well, it's Mike Trout and Trevor Bauer. And he says, 23 is like Tatis off the bat. And I'm going, you know, what's really cool. Like when I'm 45, when I hear 23, the first thing pops into my head is Michael Jordan. Right. For people who are like probably in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, 23, first thing pops in their head is probably like LeBron James. And what's going to happen for this generation, for, you know, kids like the age of my son, or like when they hear 23, when they're 40, the first thing popping in their head is going to be Fernando Tatis Jr., which is that's like when you are associated with a number and that number means you, man, that's iconic type stuff. And that also gives him the kind of leverage that he has in this kind of a situation with a contract. So do I think some gets done right now? Probably. Would I be surprised if it didn't? No, because you just don't know what's going to go. I would be surprised, however, if he signed a 10, 11 year deal.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
now. That would be surprising to me, because you got to figure by the time he hits free agency, when he's in what, 4 years, when he's 25, you got to figure that baseball economics will be the case where a player of his caliber, a position player, will get an average of $40 million a year, right? Like this, it'll increase to that point. So he's actually leaving a lot of money on the table if he signs that long of a contract now. So that would be a little surprising to me.
Yeah. And, you know, as we've discussed with, you know, Mike Trout just getting that huge deal now, I guess about 2 years ago, you know, if you position yourself for a 5 or 6 year contract, you're basically at the top of your prime. If you're Tatis, now 22 years old, when you're signing that next deal, and that would, if he continues, you know, on the path he's on, would inevitably be much more lucrative than any 10 to 11 year contract he'd sign now, right? Potentially by $100 million. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, look at the Trout deals. I mean, it was what, 144 or something like that. And then pops to 420. You know, and he signed it when he was what, 27 years old, right? That's about where that's probably I think is the logical thing for Tatis, right? Is you get through this, get a big contract at like 175. And then when you're 26, you hit free agency again. Mm-hmm. And now you're talking about a Patrick Mahomes contract, except it's fully guaranteed.
You had mentioned just his earning aside from baseball. And I don't know if you read the Jeff Passan piece and his thoughts on the whole situation. And basically he said that the rumors, reports that we heard in the last week were pretty far-fetched. And how, you know, both he and Ken Rosenthal basically mentioned, you know, it might actually benefit Tatis to wait, because he doesn't need the money because of the endorsement deals he has. I mean, the two big ones just off the top of the head that we've seen, BMW and Gatorade. Now Gatorade one we're seeing all the time now. So he's
isn't it great.
He's making plenty of money aside from baseball. And once he enters those arbitration years, he's going to be making a boatload those three seasons. So it's not like he's going to be hurting for money. And you know, the further along he goes, I would think the further along he goes, again, assuming that his performance stays on the path it is on, just the greater his earning potential becomes. And if he were to decide, you know, I'm going to hold out and sign, you know, before the 2023 or 2024 seasons, that contract just gets bigger and bigger, right? Than what he's getting now when he's going into a season where he's making, you know, just over 500,000 before the arbitration years kick in.
Yeah, the big question mark, and the thing that everyone kind of has to look at and ask themselves, is injury. You know, if you go out and you go ahead and sign an 11-year, $300 million contract, you're set for life. If you get it's guaranteed. The team has insurance against it. You get paid, right? I think the Mets are going to pay Bobby Bonilla until like I'm dead. You know, like you're going to get that money in some capacity. So do you want to do that and say, I don't ever have to worry about if I'm, you know, in a car wreck and I can't run like I used to, I don't have to worry about if I tear something and I'm not the same player I was? Or do you want to go ahead and say, you know what? And again, with baseball, odds are something like that doesn't happen, but you know, but it does. Things like that do happen to great players. So that's the other thing he's going to have to look at is, do I want to just go and sign this and say, man, I'm set for life. And by the way, he'll only be, if he signs a 10-year contract, he'll be 32.
Yeah.
By the time that's over, still he's going to make money even at that point. You know, mm-hmm. Will it be the mega deal? Probably not, but he's still going to, he'll sign for a lot of cash after that. So it's all really all comes down to is, what does the player want and what is the team comfortable with? You know, that's what we don't know. You know, when Alex Rodriguez signed that $252 million contract, people going, he's not worth it. No player is worth it. Yeah, you're worth what people are willing to pay you. Mm-hmm. That's what you're worth. So whatever the club or whatever club is willing to give him and whatever he is comfortable with, You know, maybe he says, hey, I want to do a Tom Brady thing. I want to leave some money on the table so the Padres can go out and get that pitcher that we need because I want to win 7 World Series in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's like that because he's making money in other places. Or he marries a supermodel. Who knows? You know, because both are possible.
Both are very much within the realm of possibility.
Yes. Yeah, so who knows what he and his lifestyle and his goals and his desires are, you know? And that's totally up to him. Is he going to be like Tony Gwynn and take less money so he can stay in one place? Or is he going to, you know, want to go out and get, hey man, for the Players Association, I'm going to go out and get what I'm worth so that it helps everybody, you know? And you see how he's right in any one of those ways of looking at it.
Yeah. I know you don't spend a lot of time scrolling Instagram. Did you see the video he posted? I guess it was 2 days ago. I think Tuesday.
No.
It was, you know, we've talked about his off-season adventures and like everything he posts is just some beautiful hike or some gorgeous landscape or something like that. He's hiking like between a canyon. And I know if you've done, have you done the Narrows at Zion?
I've not.
So famous hike and mm-hmm. Bill Center, actually, about a year ago, we talked to him about Narrows. It's his favorite hike. And you're going through
photos. It looks amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you're walking through the stream and, you know, cliffs on either side of you, you're in the middle of a canyon, it kind of gets narrow. It kind of looks like that, but he's like mountain goating it over these rocks and through a stream and there's a waterfall and all this stuff and just like incredible looking. You know, it's like once the world gets back to normal, all of a sudden like Dominican Republic is number one on my list of places to visit. I just want to go on like the Fernando Tatis Dominican Republic tour. The caption
that would be awesome.
The caption was something along the lines of and my translation might not be great, but going somewhere the rumors can't go or somewhere the rumors can't reach. So he's you know, it seems like he's handling it well. You know, he's living his life, he's doing his thing, and again, it's not the type of situation where they have to get it hammered out in the next couple months, or, you know, he's going into his final season. You know, he can probably slow play it and enjoy the process, appreciate it for what it is. Know that his future looks pretty bright regardless, and he's going to get a pretty lucrative contract at some point, but, you know, he's got all that endorsement cash to fall back on. And he seems like he's in a place that he wants to be. Doesn't seem like a high maintenance guy. It doesn't seem like the type where, you know, maybe if the Padres are dragging this thing on into 2024 and haven't shown the commitment, the interest in giving him what he's due, you know, that then we'll really find out. But at this point, just, and we've talked about how he's kind of the perfect superstar, what we've seen so far is just like so low maintenance, so low ego. Doesn't seem like these things get in the way or cause problems or any sort of friction or drama. I'm sure he wants to kind of, he'll want to get it sorted out, you know, when he feels comfortable doing so, but, you know, it's not to the extent where it's going to be a distraction or cause any issues, at least at this juncture.
And that's where being a leader comes in. And that's where he's already become taken a huge leadership role in this organization. I mean, Manny Machado finished third in the MVP balloting because he's playing next to Fernando Tatis Jr. You know, Manny's got the ability. He always has. Now he's playing with the kind of passion that he needs to play with in order to reach his full potential. And it's because of the dude right next to him. I mean, there's Aaron Boone's come on this podcast and said the exact same thing. That is, Fernando Tatis Jr. is unlocking Manny Machado. And we've seen it, man. And we've talked about it. When we're in the clubhouse and he comes walking through, everybody knows that's the alpha.
Yeah.
You can just see guys like kind of just watch him walk. Like, he even looks cool when he walks.
You know? Looks cool when he does anything.
Yeah, he just looks like an athlete when he walks, you know? And everybody's just like, that's the guy, you know? That is the guy. And when you have that kind of just presence, I dare even say aura about you, you become the leader of that club. And you hear him in the interviews, you know, I want to lead the guys. I want to be there for my teammates. I always want to help the guys. I want to be there for my boys, you know, and that's, and that's not lip service. He really believes that. And then when you've got a guy who was that uber talented and he's out there, got the back of his teammates like, go, man, I am busting my rear end because that dude wants me to, that's the kind of impact that he has on this organization. It's incredible at that young age.
Yeah, and there's the competitive side of it too. The healthy one-upsmanship you get in a clubhouse, where Machado sees what Tatis is doing. He sees the numbers. He sees the no doubters, the moonshots. You know, him putting one on top of the Western Metal Supply Company building. All that stuff. You know, there's that innate, characteristic that so many athletes have, where that alone pushes them. You know, it's that unspoken stuff, seeing somebody work, seeing somebody continually improving and putting up big numbers and doing amazing things in the field. You know, it naturally makes a guy like Machado, like you said, who's playing in close proximity to him and is uber talented in his own respect, you know, he's going to want to continue to step it up. And it is pretty incredible just the stature that he has in the game. And, you know, people get excited about young stars, and like that would have probably happened regardless. But, you know, like you're talking about the leadership piece of it, that's not always guaranteed. And so in a sense, that's like even more impressive. Like you can be a superstar and everybody talks about you and shows your highlights and gets excited, but you know, having the type of character that he seems to have is kind of the icing on the cake.
It's like the, like you said, like the perfect superstar. You know, it's like if you were going to put together in a lab all the different things to make somebody like the most prototypical build a franchise around this guy person, they would pop out with Fernando Tatis Jr.
That's kind of what Emilio said to us last week. And again, go back and listen to that interview. Emilio was awesome. Such a fun conversation. But he was like, you know, he's big, he's strong, he's quick, he's got the IQ, he's got the it factor. Like you said, it's like if you were to build somebody on like MLB The Show, like that's the superstar that you would build. On the contract side, say like hypothetically, he said, you know what, let's go for it. Let's do a 10-year deal. What does the money look like in that situation? Like the big money is towards the end, right? You know, given the obligations, the financial obligations the club has as it stands, the first few years wouldn't be too kind of mind-blowing. But as it goes, as we get to 25, 26, 27, that's where he's cashing the enormous checks, right?
You'd have to think that. Yeah. You'd have to look at, okay, they have to get creative with the way that they structure it, which, I mean, they certainly can. Again, because you've got Hosmer on the books, you've got Machado on the books. So you'd have to probably look at it as, okay, assuming that they don't opt out, because you just never know if they are going to or not. Assuming they don't opt out, you're going to have those contracts on the books for that long. You have to look at how do we going to mitigate this and be able to still, you know, have a competitive team without completely blowing the bank, getting over the luxury tax, all that good stuff. Because if you're talking about giving somebody, you're going to have two $35 million guys plus a $20 million guy in Will, and a Halsworth contract starts to drop soon. So it's not going to be all that much. But then you have another $13 million in Snell and another $20 million in Darvish. Like you're getting very close to that luxury tax. Which I honestly never thought the Padres would be anywhere near that. I mean, top 10 in salary. Yeah. I thought that was possible, but near that stratosphere with the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox play, never thought they'd get anywhere close to that. So you do have to think about it, but you would have to have it backloaded, I guess is the mm-hmm. popular phrase. You'd have to get kind of funky with the way that you do that. Or maybe it's like an every other year thing. You know, you go 40 million this year, 20 million the next year, 40 million this year, 20 million the next year. And then it averages 30 throughout the life of the contract. You know, whatever it is, to give you some sort of flexibility with what free agents you could sign, maybe on a 1-year deal that year. You know, I don't know. AJ is a heck of a lot more creative with that, but you're right. You'd have to get it into a way where you're not blowing it all up right now, because you already have some fairly substantial numbers on the books.
You mentioned seeing the Padres, you know, climb so much in terms of payroll and going from, year in, year out, they're kind of in the bottom third to now they're projected like top five, something like that.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. How surprising is that? Again, you've been covering the team for well over a decade. And it's, you know, also in this climate, in this economy, they're zigging while everyone else is zagging. I think that's how the phrase goes. They're spending more when others are being, even just look at the Cubs, you know, shedding salary by getting rid of Yu Darvish. They're going against the grain, and it seems to have benefited them and their ability to land some of these guys and be aggressive. I'm curious how much of it is them just thinking, well, as soon as we open the gates, the place is going to be full. Knowing that they're going to have that interest, they have all the merchandising stuff now that they've gone brown. I'm sure that that's benefited them to a degree already. What's your outlook on all this, being, you know, having been around the team as long as you have, for them to take this dramatic of a swing at this stage where there is so much uncertainty and so many people are playing it a bit more cautious than the Padres seem to be?
This is nuts. it's completely nuts. Again, on their 40-man roster right now, looking at SportTrack, they're at 151 million. That's fifth in Major League Baseball. That's ahead of the Astros, the Nationals, the Red Sox, the Phillies, and the Giants.
Yeah.
Right behind the Angels, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, who are all, I mean, they're always going to be up in that top four, right?
Yeah.
And the Padres still have work to do. They still have to sign a couple of relievers, like a Kirby Yates. They've been tied a link to Alex Colome, maybe Trevor Rosenthal. Those guys aren't going to come cheap. Mm-hmm. So you're going to run this thing up to around 160 up into, you know, Mets territory. Well, until the Mets actually stand Lindor, then they'll jump right up again. But it's crazy. To see the Padres spending $150+ million just, and this is just on their, like I said, their 26 man payroll, mm-hmm. the 40 man roster, right? They're still going to add to this. They're also going to add, like we said at the beginning of the show, on the international market. They're going to spend $5-6 million at least there. They are throwing money around like it's like they have some sort of printing press hidden in the bowels of Petco Park that we don't know about. Or they've got some sort of really great investment thing that Peter Seidler is going to have to write a book about and share with the rest of us so we can all, you know, bask in the glory of just being able to do whatever the hell we want to do with our money at any given time. That would be awesome. This, when you go through the Mooreses and then the Morads of the world, this is not, this is weird. It's like, it's weird, you know, because you're talking about the top four teams are in Los Angeles and New York, top two markets in the country. And behind them are Houston, top 15, Washington, top 10, Boston, top 10, Philly, top five, San Francisco, top five. And then there's the Padres, you know, the quote unquote small market club that's out there like, screw you guys. We see an inequity in the market. We're going to go get it and win right now.
Yeah.
I would have never in a trillion years thought the Padres would jump to $150+ million. 120, yeah, I can see that. 125, nah, we're pushing it. 150, and it's going to go higher. That blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think just like a year ago, we were talking about 130, 140 as like potential thresholds.
Because we don't know, like we just don't know how much money that Peter has. This is insane. This is absolutely insane. And what's really cool about it is, as you think about it now, and this is all that's kind of coming to me right now, is that, not that I'm a stream of consciousness talker or anything,
not at all,
you guys haven't been able to figure that out, is he's probably had this the whole time, right? But look at the way that they spent it. They didn't go out and just like start doing a Steinbrenner where they're going to buy, I want Alex Rodriguez, I want Jason Giambi out, and just start going and buying Roger Clemens. Give me all the biggest guys you can and just start throwing money at the problem. Where they put that cash is in the system. They, you know, the $190 million in the 2016 international market spending spree, you know, going over slot for some draft picks, building the system in that way. That's been incredibly smart, the way that they've gone about it. It's like you look back and you go, okay, you had all this capital. You could have done it at any given moment, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't. They hung out. They put it in the system where it's supposed to be. And now they've got the infrastructure and they've got the foundation of a program. You know, this, we're talking about like, you know, Ohio State, you know, where you can just restock every year. That's what the Padres more or less are doing with their farm system. You just reload every year and go. That's what they've done. And now they're able to supplement that with the cash at the big league level as well, and still go out and make trades for guys who have that kind of higher contract and still have a highly regarded system. It's so savvy the way that they put this whole plan together. It's like with AJ and Peter and Ron and you know, David Post and Logan White and Chris Kemp. I mean, all these guys who have put together this plan and then executed it like this there need to be movies done about this. All right. Moneyball is one thing. This is a whole different way of building a successful franchise, and it's freaking awesome.
I like how you used, and I know why, but I like how you used Ohio State as example for recruiting and not the team that just boat raced them in the national championship.
Yeah. War Eagle.
You've got some familial ties that don't allow you to give credence to the Alabama recruitment factory
up north. Yeah.
That 2017 class has paid a pretty good dividends for Nick Saban and those guys down there. Well, part of it too is just like, it's they recognize that like their window for opportunity, their window of opportunity has arrived. Like it's not like the 2015 situation where just kind of bring in a bunch of big name free agents and hope it works. They're doing this now because the stars have kind of aligned, because the international signings, guys that have been coming up in the system, they're arriving or have arrived. And, they took a couple of big swings with Hosmer and Machado, and they're in this position now to be able to strike. And so if ever there was a time to put all your chips in, which many people have used that analogy, like this is it. Like, it just adds up. It makes sense.
Yeah. And that's what's crazy though, is they're not going all in right now. Because it's like, they have multiple years of this team. And in its current state, they have multiple years like this. Trent Grisham's 24. Jake Cronenworth's only 27. Like this is not one of those, like, we're going all in right now to win. Like, they're going all in right now to win. And then again, again. And then, you see the MLB.com article where they tried to predict the next 10 World Series champs? They got to win the 2023 World Series. Like this is going to be a long haul of a golden era of, or dare I say, a brown and golden era of Padres baseball.
Yeah. And that's the cool part of it. And that's what was said, you know, with the Mike Clevenger deal and, has kind of been reiterated since. There is a longevity to this, and, you know, Darvish and Snell both there through 2023, and Machado under contract the way he is, and, you know, Tatis at some point, wouldn't be shocked if it happened at some point in the off season. So that's what's cool. They've positioned themselves to do it for a long time, and they've opened up the wallets to make it happen, to capitalize on this window that has kind of been opening the last couple of years. And they want to make sure it's wide open and step through and do everything they can to make the most of this opportunity. I was just looking at jersey sales. The $150 or so dollar Blake Snell, Yu Darvish jerseys that people are going to be ordering, that might be part of the printing press that they have hidden in the basement somewhere too.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, man, those brown uniforms, dude, that they, I think, made more than anybody even knows.
I'm not smart enough to consider that, but I wonder how much that was like, obviously they didn't know it was coming down in terms of the pandemic, so nobody could have foreseen that. But I'm sure somebody like Eric Grubner and the owners knew, you know, this is going to increase our earning potential and our ability to spend. And I'm sure AJ Preller knew when those uniforms came out, this might make my job a little bit easier.
And what's crazy is, and Ron has been very open about, like, he didn't like it. He for years he was like, no, they just don't look good. And then finally he was like, you know what? I got to listen to these people. Got to give them what they want, even though we don't think it looks good at all. And then they were able to find something that wasn't just that kind of traditional, you know, the taco ones, you know, the brown, the poop uniforms or whatever they were called. And make it look like, get the color scheme and make it look really slick. And he goes, okay, if we can do it like that, All right, then let's go ahead and we'll roll the dice on this. And it wasn't even a roll the dice situation. It was a, man, this was just a put it on a tee and knock it out the park.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So on the free agency front, on the acquisition front, where are they? What's next? You mentioned pitching another reliever, a Yates or Rosenthal type. There's the report about Masahiro Tanaka, which Yu Darvish would be a fan of. And
that
cranks up the payroll a little bit more, but certainly solidifies kind of the back end of the rotation. Then you wonder, like, okay, are we looking at six-man rotations, you know, especially coming off of a year where guys were so limited, starting pitchers were so limited in terms of innings that they threw, might benefit you to go to a six-man rotation and give everybody that extra break and limit how many innings they throw over what we hope to be the course of a 162 game season. What's the next move you foresee?
Well, what you just said makes perfect sense why they'd be interested in Tanaka, because, and I know about the, you know, the Larry Rothschild relationship that he has. He was great with Larry when they were together in New York, but you want a guy who's going to eat innings. This is the dude who eats innings. I mean, he is, I don't know the exact numbers, but he was somewhere right around, you know, 150 to 180 innings every year. You know, he makes his starts. He goes deeper into games. He's a professional guy. He's a lot better than a lot of people give him credit for, probably because he was, you know, in New York where it was, oh, they got James Paxton, and oh, they got Garrett Cole, and this is the guy who was just the constant for him. You know, he was just there every single day, making every start, keeping him in games, you know, keeping him in series. That would be a great addition to them, simply because he is, as they say, one of the best abilities in sports is availability. Mm-hmm. And he has been available to be there and eat innings, and not just eat innings, but Clayton Richard could eat innings. You know, Tanaka can eat innings and eat shutout innings and win you baseball games. So I think that would be a very savvy move, getting a guy like that. And again, we have no idea what his contract demands would be, but man, that if you add him to the mix, you got to figure that they are. I don't buy into they're scared for Denelson Lamet's injury problems. I think they're probably counting on Lamet for probably around 20 to 22 starts this year, would be my guess. You know, not making the full, if they play 162 games, which Rob Manfred just came out and said, yeah, we're doing that. We're going to see if that actually works. They're not going to make him have a full 32, 33, 34 starts year. I don't think they're counting on that. Maybe up to like 20, 25 starts for Lamet. They simply want to have more guys available to go out there and do it. Because I don't think they even see guys like Snell making more than 25 starts. You know, they want to ease these guys back in after the shorter year that they had last year. So they just want as many arms, as many options as they possibly can. And this is a dude who would fit right into that plan.
I was just looking at it. He's average, you know, he signed that 7-year 155 with the Yankees. And so he averaged 22 million. I don't know what the expectation would be for him now as a free agent. I would guess that 22 number would be difficult for the Padres. So I'd assume he's not shooting for that. Probably not in that neighborhood. You know, signed that as a 25-year-old, a 7-year contract.
Yeah, he's 32 now. You know, so he's probably not going to get that. He's certainly not that length of a deal. But he could get a 3-year deal at 55.
Sure.
You know, somewhere around there. I could totally see teens. Him getting something like that. You know, yeah, exactly. Maybe not 20 million a year, but he could get 18 million a year at his age with what he's been able to do and how consistently he's been able to do it. I mean, yeah, okay, I just pulled his numbers up. All right. 199 innings in 2016, 178, 156, 182, and then, you know, 48 last year. But he goes out and he makes the starts, man. He's consistent. And I know it. I know the guy who we have on the podcast several times, Aaron Boone, Brett Boone, Aaron's brother. He's talked to him, and Aaron absolutely loves Tanaka. I mean, loves the guy from a skipper's perspective. He's a godsend to that organization. I mean, that's why Brett likes him so much too. He goes out, he's just a professional and effective. And that's what you want in a guy you're bringing into a situation like this. Someone's going to come in and buy in and just be a stabilizing factor and give you innings and give you another chance to win a ball game every fifth day.
Or every sixth day.
or every seventh day, you know, throw them all once a week, dude. You know, they're all do the Shohei Ohtani thing with all of them. They all get one start a week.
It's like college baseball. You got your Friday starter, your Saturday starter, your Sunday starter.
Yeah, except now they have a Monday starter and a Tuesday starter and a Wednesday. Yeah, and then, hey, everybody gets an extra day whenever they only have 6 week games in a week.
So if you know, your most common days off are Monday and Thursday, that's maybe where you stash your, like, sixth and seventh starters?
Yeah.
They get the least amount of work.
They get the fewest amount, lowest amount of work, right? And that, you know, that's when you have, you know, that's Mackenzie Gore is your Thursday starter. You know, you work the rookie in more. You know, Ryan Weathers is your Tuesday starter. You work the rookie in more.
Yeah. Do you see the Dodgers are kicking the tires on Kirby? That'd be a punch in the gut, wouldn't it?
I would not like that. Yeah, I was going. That would suck because, I mean, they let Baez walk, so they have to replace him, and they'd be getting an upgrade if they went out and got Kirby Yates.
Sure.
Oh, man, that would stink. I mean, it'd be great for Kirby. Yeah, great to have a chance to win a World Series again, and we love the guy. He's such a good dude. But to go there, plus you'd have to see him 19 times a year,
yeah,
and that's no fun.
It's not like he's just going to the Yankees or something like that, and it's kind of annoying, but whatever. Yeah,
go to a different league across the country, you know. Go that would be awesome. You know, have fun in Boston. But yeah, just don't stay out of the National League West unless it's the Padres, because I don't know, that dude's so darn good. I don't want to see the Padres have to face him 19 times a year.
And, you know, so beloved by the team. And we saw the cardboard cutout when they're taking the team picture after I think it was after the wild card series.
Yep.
When they beat the Cardinals. And, you know, to have a guy like that leave in and of itself is rough. And then, like you said, to have to see him a bunch with a team like the Dodgers and the rivalry building the way that it is, that's a drag. I always wonder what it's like from a player's standpoint. You know, obviously it's like for fans, it's like how I can't even imagine. But for a player, you know, it is business. Kirby is also, you know, he's a salty guy. I would assume that, like, he's felt the rivalry with the Dodgers and has, you know, developed some bit of animosity, but it's also easy for us to say. And, you know, during that series, you saw Bellinger and Mookie Betts, you know, joking around with Tatis and all that. You know, I would love to ask, you know, a guy in that position, like, how much do you feel that? And then how much do you think about it when it comes time to make a business decision like that, and you think, you know, maybe the Dodgers are the best place for me monetarily or to win or what have you?
I think it depends on the guy. You know, they're like, I know, again, to go back to the guy like Tony, I don't think he ever would have signed with the Dodgers. He just wouldn't have, you know. And again, he would have so many other options, and it wouldn't have to be a factor. But even if there was more money on the table with the Dodgers, he wouldn't do it. So but that's just how he's wired. I'm not sure how exactly Kirby is wired when it comes to that kind of a thing. I would hope that he would say, listen, if I've got money in San Diego and I've got money in LA, if the difference is not that big, even if it's more in LA, I gotta stay with the team that basically rescued my career, you know, stick with the guy. We built something here and I want to be a part of that. That's what I would hope would happen. But if you did sign with LA, absolutely best of luck to you. Wish him nothing but the best, except for the 19 times that they play the Padres.
Do you expect one of those guys to come back, Yates or Rosenthal? Do you think that there's a possibility that maybe they shift Pomeranz to the ninth and you know, some of the stuff we saw from Emilio Pagan and what the expectations were of him coming to San Diego? Maybe he's kind of a setup type guy. They go out and find somebody just to fill some of those early innings. Like, what do you think, if you had to guess, the most likely,
man? I could totally see, you know, three different Padres having 10 saves. Mm-hmm. You know, use them situationally. You know, you need Yates in the eighth inning because the Dodgers 2, 3, 4 guys are coming up, use them there. And then Pomeranz or Pagan or Rosenthal has the ninth, you know, and technically gets the save. But they're all basically working the highest. It wouldn't be like the ninth inning guy. It would be the highest leverage guy. You know, this is where we need these outs the most, because it's a two-run game in the eighth inning, and look at what's coming up. That's where you go to your quote-unquote closer to make sure you get through that, and then you have, you know, closer option 1A ready to work the ninth inning. You know, because maybe there are three lefties coming up there and you want Pomeranz to handle the ninth inning. That's, I could totally see them doing something along those lines this year. So it's good to have guys who can, who are not only have the stuff to handle that kind of inning, which Yates and Pomeranz and Rosenthal and Pagan all certainly do. And even Jose Castillo, if he can stay healthy, probably has closer type stuff. You know, they have the mentality for it as well. You know, they're just wired the right way.
I saw some pictures floating around from folks on Padres Twitter about this. The Fan Fest was like a year ago this week. It's one of those like distant artifacts of a world now gone.
Yeah,
it's that we enjoy because it was a chance to hear from some of the guys, you know.
Yeah, it always happens in January. It was always fun to go out there and do it and you know, just kind of see the excitement. It was the first time we really saw them, other than that the reveal of the brown uniforms. First time we saw everybody in the brown uniforms. It's always just a cool, fun event.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, don't get a chance to enjoy that this year. Anything else in terms of ideas and what's ahead? Potential targets.
Well, you've got to figure they're probably going to add at least one more bench piece,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to add probably another starter in some capacity, and they got to address the bullpen. I mean, those would be probably the first three on the pecking order, maybe not in any particular order, but they have to do something in order to just kind of fill out the last couple pieces here, unless, you know, as we said, they've got these guys and they're pretty much sold on what they're going to have on the farm. I mean, you know, aside, of course, the Tatis talks, but yeah. I mean, maybe they think Jorge Onya is that guy who can be the dude who comes in, maybe, or if they find out they're going to get a DH, you know, do they go out and look at somebody who could be just kind of a, you know, a legit DH? I would love to see Jurickson Profar come back.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic. You know, if Profar, Yates and Rosenthal all came back, this team's going to win the World Series. If they add Tanaka to it, then they'll win the World Series in a sweep.
They'll win it twice.
They'll win it, then they'll turn around and win it again.
It's hard to imagine Rosenthal and Yates, right? Am I wrong?
It's hard to imagine, yeah, but it's not out of the question. And again, we don't know what other teams are offering up to try. Maybe if it's some, you know, blow you out of the water type contract. Then they have to certainly take it. If they want to be the guy, the ninth inning guy, and not work into more of a, you know, platoon type thing, then they would certainly have to take it. But with how much we know Kirby loves this team and this city, and how much Rosenthal really fell in love with being here, I could totally see both of those guys coming back. You know, does it work financially for them and for the Padres? Who knows? Again, that's up to the individual parties. But when you're talking about, you know, a personality and a fit, It's hard to find a better fit for those two guys, even together on this ball club.
Yeah. And you knew that about Yates. Yeah, that was the cool thing with Rosenthal, just how much he embraced San Diego and the fan base and Lolita's outside Petco Park. And he clearly wanted to stay in San Diego. But like you said, does it work from a business standpoint, from a financial standpoint? You know, what is available to him elsewhere? You know, there's a lot of questions that he's got to take into consideration. I feel like he's been a little bit quieter on Twitter lately. Maybe, hopefully, that's not a sign of what's to come, and him pivoting to a different direction. But he loved it here. Fans loved him. Obviously, a great fit, and would be great to see him back. But
we're gonna have memories watching the video of who was the guy who was on the mound when the Padres secured their first playoff spot.
In
14 years, it was Rosenthal. Who's the guy who was on the mound when the Padres won their first playoff series in 22 years? It was Trevor Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Like he is, short of the time that he was here, if he doesn't come back, he is etched into huge portion of Padres history.
Sure.
Which is awesome. He's always going to be well remembered and well liked here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, file that away in future visits to Bar Trivia. It's a name that could come up. All right. I don't have anything else. It's the last few weeks, it's just been so jam packed, and this has felt a bit more like a normal off season week, especially in terms of the way things have gone elsewhere across baseball. It's like the Padres are the ones that have, you know, other than the Lindor trade, you know,
right. Which is, you know, huge. And the Mets are going to get Syndergaard back at some point during the season too. So, mm-hmm. and adding Carrasco, I mean, Cookie's a great dude and is a heck of a pitcher. So that's, the Mets all of a sudden are real players in the National League. I mean, let me ask you a hypothetical question. All right. If you could have two of Yates, Rosenthal, Colomé, Tanaka, which two and why?
Yates, Rosenthal, Colomé, Tanaka. I've really warmed up to the idea of Tanaka, especially after spending some time talking with you about it. Part of me is likes the idea of having that fifth spot open, though, just out of curiosity, just to see, you know, when you have Weathers, Morjon, Gore, and Joey Fuego still hanging around.
Yeah, Lucchese's kind of like the almost a forgotten guy in all of this.
Yeah. So that's the interesting part of me. But, you know, with all of these stories about them bringing in Snell and Darvish and the potential of Tanaka, there's usually a line in there, something along the lines of Padres' uncertainty about the health of Dinelson Lamet. So maybe that fifth position is there regardless, which would be unfortunate because we'd love to see Dinelson Lamet healthy. I'd say one of Yates or in Rosenthal, which is a really tough. I'll go with Yates for longevity and continuity's sake, even though Rosenthal was lights out and a really fun addition. I'll go Yates and Tanaka. Tanaka, fun Japanese 1-2 punch with Yu Darvish. He and Darvish are friends. That would be cool. Reunited with Larry Rothschild. And like you said, the stability that he would bring, especially in a year like this, where who knows what's going to happen in terms of guys' arms getting fatigued and injuries and this and that. And so having somebody of his makeup would certainly help. And then comeback season for Yates and him hopefully returning to what we saw in 2019, I think would be awesome. And for him to see this thing through, to have arrived when things were a bit lean, come into his own kind of that first year and a half with the Padres, and then not be able to enjoy 2020, to be able to come back and be part of what could be a World Series push, I think would be great for Yates.
See, those are the two that I would go with as well. And it's like Colomé has got great numbers, and Rosenthal, we love the guy and great numbers, but it's like the heartstring part of me is like, yeah, but Kirby's going to come back and he's going to be a badass and he's going to be fine. And we love the man. And then Tanaka for the starting pitching part of it, because when you add him to the mix. So then just not even this year, look at 2022. Holy crap. Mm-hmm. You know? And then how about this? Then that makes Ryan Weathers and Adrian Morejon expendable. So when the National League gets a DH, you trade them for Nolan Arenado. Boom, done.
You're always thinking a few steps ahead.
And I guarantee you, as ridiculous as that sounds with AJ Preller, it's not all that ridiculous.
Nothing's outside the realm of possibility. So we'll see what the next week or so brings. You just never know with him. But there's definitely, as everybody knows, there's some moves to be made and much left to be discussed in the weeks ahead. I mean, it's crazy, like a little over a month until pitchers and catchers would report. We're usually there like around the 22nd, 23rd, and it's usually like a few days after things get going. It's pretty wild how close we are, especially considering that Major League Baseball is planning and on track to start on time, which I don't know if it's a surprise or not. You know, leagues are kind of going for it these days, and you know they were able to figure some stuff out last season, and you know, pushing it back then kind of shrinks what your potential season is, and you know, maybe you just kind of launch into this thing, get going, and hope that you can open the gates to more and more people as vaccinations happen and people hopefully get healthier and yada yada.
Yeah, I remember Eric Grubner told us last week that spring training might be a chance for Padres fans to go out and see the club, you know, a lot sooner. And they're going to try to have, you know, reduced capacity about 20% on opening day at Petco Park, which is April 1st against the Diamondbacks, which is awesome. But you want to go see them in a little bit sooner. You might be able to, Arizona's been a little more loose with things. You mm-hmm. might be able to go out and do that. So like, we got to talk to our higher ups about what we're doing about spring training.
Right? I know. I was just, yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I'm really curious how that's going to look for us, you know, with all sports and all these leagues and the college and professional levels, you know, media has understandably been kept at a safe distance, and don't necessarily know that would change, at least in terms of the in-person stuff and interviews, but would still be nice to be able to roam around outside the various fields down there in Peoria and see some of the stuff in person, even if we're kind of relating through a screen, which we've been doing a lot of.
I would love to be able to just walk out to Field 9, watch them take some batting practice, watch them do some outfield work. You know, for some reason, I always end up every spring training, I always end up back on Field 9 and find something fun to shoot.
Well, we started this episode by talking about the significance of a number. Who's number 9? What is this number 9 that you feel so drawn to?
That'd be Ted Williams.
There you go.
Yep. San Diego native, greatest hitter who ever lived.
All right. We got lots of stuff on the website. You'd mentioned the fan piece. If you hadn't checked out the recap of our conversation with Eric Grubner that you wrote up last week, just in terms of the details and the possibilities, because obviously a lot of interest in that from fans. Make sure to check that out on the sports wrap page at NBC7.com. Always updating it with local sports news, Aztecs, goals. They've got their preseason schedule out. Todd did a great story yesterday about just the continuing limbo on the high school front and the let them play initiative that's popping up across the state. Last edition, I'm pretty sure we can't have another one, and we don't have another game next weekend, right? We've football night in San Diego has gone a little bit longer than I think we expected going into the postseason, which has been a lot of fun. We have another edition coming up Saturday after Bills Ravens, correct? I should know this.
Yes, Bills Ravens, 5 o'clock on NBC Sunday Night Football, and then Football Night in San Diego with you and Todd and me and Rich Schoenberger and Greg Camarillo and a cast of like 7 or 8. So it's been a really fun show this year too. Like it's been cool to just kind of go all around and not have to worry about that other team that left exclusively. We're just going to talk, you know, like just talk football with the guys. Yeah. It's been really, really cool. And also this week we're going to take a look at the future of Philip Rivers from the lens of not Philip, but the people he played with and was coached by this year on what they would like to see him do.
Who's putting that piece together, Derek?
That'd be me. How do you think I knew about it?
No, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, Phillips won, you know, this aging crop of very talented quarterbacks and a number of future Hall of Famers in the mix. Some big questions and fun to see those guys kind of stick it out. It would have been nice to see Rivers pull it out against the Bills, but we got Breeze and Brady this weekend. It's funny that as long as those guys have been around, how many years was there the potential of a Patriots Saints Super Bowl? We just never got it.
Oh, several years. Yeah. And I mean, now, it's several times.
Now they're in the same division. They get to battle it out for a spot in the NFC Championship game. So that's pretty
neat. And by the way, do you see any way that this game is any different than the other two times they played? Remember the last time that they met, the first time was the first game of the year, whatever, you know, Brady's still getting to know his guys. You could throw that one out. But then the second time they played in Tampa, it was 38-3. I mean, that was an absolute boat race. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see, I mean, Sean Payton's got the whammy on Bruce Arians. I don't see how this game is any different.
Yeah. I mean, Brady's going to have to access some different level that we haven't seen from him, at least in this matchup. And he has turned it on of late. I mean, that offense kind of went through a bit of a stretch where it didn't really have any teeth, and they've been playing well. He's got good chemistry with the wideouts, facing a really, really good defense. So, I mean, that's the matchup right there. When Brady's on the field, feels like that's when the game will be settled. You'll know if the Bucs really have any chance.
I'm gonna throw an upset at you. Ready? The Rams are going to beat the Packers.
Oh,
simply because I still don't trust the Rams defense is phenomenal. Legit. And the Packers, you saw it happen last year, and the two times they faced the 49ers, they got smoked because the 49ers were so good and so physical up front, and that's the Rams.
Hmm.
So I think as good as Aaron Rodgers is and as tough as Lambeau is to play, especially when they get an extra week, if any team can give them that offense trouble, it's going to be the Rams defense. And we've seen Aaron Rodgers start to get real frustrated if things don't go his way early, and then the game can kind of spin out of control. I'm going to say the Rams are going to go into Lambeau and win that football game.
Jalen Ramsey against Davante Adams. That's a lot
of fun. Which is awesome.
And you just hope Aaron Donald is right, you know.
Aaron Donald is he'll play. I have no doubt in my mind that man will play.
I think he'll play, but if you want him to be Aaron Donald, you know.
Oh, he's a freak. I was over at when the Chargers and Rams had the dual practice. I went up there and shot a bunch of it. And I remember I went over and looked at and was watching the defensive lineman workout before, you know, just kind of the individual drills. And they had one of their defensive line coaches. He was a big man. I didn't know his name. And you could tell he played the position at some point. And he had those big old German Shepherd dog arm bands on. And you got guys like Michael Brockers, you know, good, Dante Fowler, good football players who were kind of going around and working on their swim moves and different pass rushing techniques and having a little bit of trouble getting around them. And then Aaron Donald comes in, picks the man up, moves him to the side, and just goes right by him. I'm going, what in the heck did I? It's like he is so powerful. It's almost like he's a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I've never seen anything like what this guy can do on the interior of a line. It's just physically, he's just a absolute beast. And watching him play is like, that's fun. Like, usually don't say, I really look forward to watching a defensive tackle. You know, sure. Like I want to see a quarterback or running by wide out. You know, I love watching Aaron Donald play the game because, man, he's so different in what he's able to do.
Yeah. I did see one stat from Mina Kimes of ESPN showing that the Rams have struggled against play action. Aaron Rodgers has been lights out in play action. So I don't know.
But the running game though is working. Can't run, the play action don't mean nothing.
That's true. But yeah, that's going to be a fun one. We'll see what we get out of Jared Goff. Wolford is officially out, so it'll be Goff and Blake Bortles. So we'll see what that combination can do for you. It helps when the Rams provided 7 points on defense against the Seahawks. So that side of the ball is always going to be a question mark, but that defense is nasty, and we've seen it this time of year that can sometimes be enough if your offense can just be serviceable and not be too much of a detriment.
Also, remember, offense coordinator Kevin O'Connell puts the game plan together, man.
That's true.
McVay calls the plays in the game, but O'Connell puts the game plan together. And Kevin is going to be a head coach very soon in this league. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to have a little something for him.
Yeah, you wonder when his name, you know, this we're right in the middle of the carousel. And a lot of names have gotten thrown out, but I haven't seen Kevin O'Connell. You wonder when his opportunity is going to come.
He might have been telling people, I'm not ready yet. I'm not talking to anybody. You know, maybe he wants to have a couple more years under McVay to learn as much as he can. And then he'll go, okay, you know what? Let the agent know, all right, I'm ready. So, you know, start circulating the name out there. That does happen quite a bit. I mean, Eric Bieniemy's first year as a coordinator, like nobody really talked about him. Second year as a coordinator, he's the hottest name in football.
And working under Sean McVay is not going to help not going to hurt his cause either.
No. Wasn't McVay now 37-0 when he leads at halftime?
It's insane.
That's great. Like you want to talk about not just making adjustments, but countering the adjustments teams are making against you.
Yeah.
That is so hard to do.
Well, I feel like we just recorded like a football night preview edition of Saturday's action, Saturday and Sunday.
Why are we not doing a football podcast? Actually, I think we missed an opportunity this year.
All right.
Up next, goals podcast.
We will be with you Saturday night, football night in San Diego. Believe the final edition of the season, Sports Wrap, 11:35. And then, of course, stay up to date with everything that's going on the Sports Wrap page at NBC7.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See y'all.